Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. We start with the good, and Jim, I think if folks listen carefully, they heard the starter's pistol over the weekend. The 2016 presidential race is officially underway. Forget exploratory committees. Ted Cruz's hat just landed right in the center of the ring. Here's his new web ad.
It's a time for truth, a time to rise to the challenge, just as Americans have always done. I believe in America and her people, and I believe we can stand up and restore our promise. It's going to take a new generation of courageous conservatives to help make America great again. And I'm ready to stand with you to lead the fight.
So, Jim, as you point out, he obviously gets a lot of attention for being the first to officially declare. A lot of people see him as a fighter on the right, standing up, very vocal for conservative principles. Others wonder whether his tactics have actually hurt the party and whether a first-term senator is the right way to go for the Republican nominee. So a lot to get through over the next several months. But Ted Cruz making a big splash today, and the campaign's officially underway.
But no matter where you are on the political spectrum and whether you are a fan of Cruz or not a fan of Cruz, one thing I really want to salute him for is that today he's announcing he's running for president. It's not this, well, I'm thinking about maybe possibly forming an exploratory committee to dip my toe in the water. You know, it's like, no, he's running. Boom. You know, I kind of believe this is a binary choice. And I get tired of this, you know, perpetual exploratory committee because, you know, not to name other, you know, fine folks in the Republican field. But if you're a governor and you keep issuing like detailed policy statements of what the federal government ought to be doing, it kind of gives us a hint of what's on your mind. And if you're running, come on in. You know, and I'm sure that's designed to keep fundraising costs down or something like that. But the fact that he jumps past a lot of the kabuki theater, I kind of appreciate. It's also probably a very smart strategy because, look, we kind of know there's probably about 7, 8, 9 Republicans who are going to run for president. You know, the entire political world, you know, as we speak right now, Greg, is focused on Ted Cruz, hanging on his every word, debating him, talking about him, all that kind of stuff. I don't know if it's going to be that way for the 6th guy, the 7th guy, the 8th guy to announce. I think after a while, you know, there's going to be a law of diminishing returns of how much of a boomlet you get from the official announcement there. And then thirdly, look, you know, for everybody who kind of, they're all a bunch of rhinos and they're a bunch of, you know, squishes and not real. You know, look, there's Ted Cruz. All right. You cannot argue the field doesn't have a true conservative. If he's your guy, you know, good luck to him. Go do your best for him. But nobody can argue that this is all a bunch of cookie cutter candidates in this Republican field here.
Absolutely right. And as we record this, he's making his official announcement at Liberty University on stage with no notes, it would appear. He does that a lot, did it at the convention in 2012 when he was running for Senate and so forth. So I think a lot of folks appreciate that style as well. So expect him to make a big push for Iowa. I would imagine that would be a critical part of his path to the nomination. All right, on to the bad martini now. And once again, we're talking about Hillary Clinton. Jim, as you'll remember at her bizarre UN press conference a couple of weeks back, that only made the story worse for the former Secretary of State. She said, yes, I only used a private server, but I turned over all the emails that matter. And if you don't believe me there, look, most of the emails that I actually conducted were with people using their state.gov account. So all of those emails are archived. So there's nothing really to worry about. There's nothing that's really missing here. Not true. And once again, the New York Times, amazingly, being kind of at the forefront of this story, of the 300 emails that Clinton turned over to the House Select Committee investigating the Benghazi attacks, this is according to Hot Air, some reportedly show the Secretary of State using her private email account to communicate with aides who are also using private email systems. That include names like Cheryl Mills, Huma Abedin, as well as Jake Sullivan, who was one of her highly regarded foreign policy advisors. So if those folks aren't in the official record, Jim, we're obviously missing a lot here.
When you think back to the Hillary Clinton press conference, that abbreviated one, where she left quickly after the question and got more skeptical. Like came out 8 or 9 days into the controversy, and people were asking lots of questions. They had to know a good chunk of what the questions were going to be. And she's still got a bunch of stuff off. And among them was the observation that she had said, well, as you pointed out, she said, well, you know, I dealt with, you know, official State Department people at their .gov accounts for those. So those emails were documented. By the way, since then, we found out that the State Department doesn't really have a very good system. They only, around a couple months ago, put in a system to implement the official archiving of state.gov emails. So those emails may be gone as well. This is how the New York Times kind of gently puts it, raising questions about her recent assertions that she made it her practice to email aides at their government addresses so the messages would be preserved. Now, I think that the new explanation is that, you know, that there's only a small fraction of the millions of emails were sent, you know, to and from private accounts on both ends. Greg, what's a small fraction of millions?
A lot.
Right? It could be 1,000, could be 2,000, could be 3,000, could be the really important ones. Weren't we telling Stevens not to worry about security? You know, messages like that might be on the private ones, and they're probably gone forever. When it really kind of, it's a bad martini, and they just say how it's as bad as we think, Hillary Clinton and her handling of her emails, it is probably gone forever is the other bad news, that there is no government server that they're sitting on. All the good stuff has probably long since been deleted or, you know, beyond the reach of Benghazi investigators and things like that. We'll see. But my suspicion is that they're gone forever.
Amazing. On to the crazy martini now. And we go to President Obama, who a couple days after the Israeli elections and after much criticism for not quickly congratulating Benjamin Netanyahu, did in fact do that. But apparently most of the phone call was about him excoriating Netanyahu for wanting to abandon a two-state solution in the Middle East and for apparently fear-mongering as a result of suggesting that Arab turnout on Election Day was very high. Here's Obama discussing the issue with a truly sympathetic reporter at the Huffington Post.
Israeli democracy has been premised on everybody in the country being treated equally and fairly. And I think that is what's best about Israeli democracy. If that is lost... Then I think that not only does it give ammunition to folks who don't believe in a Jewish state, but it also I think starts to erode the meaning of democracy.
I mean, can you unring that bell, basically?
Well, I think that's probably a question better addressed to the Prime Minister.
A little different tone than the President had just before the midterms in 2010 when talking about the need for good turnout among Latino voters, he assumed for Democrats.
And I think a lot of it is going to depend on whether we still have some support, not only from Democrats, but also Republicans, but they're going to be paying attention to this election. And if Latinos sit out the election, instead of saying we're going to punish our enemies and we're going to reward our friends who stand with us on issues that are important to us, if they don't see that kind of upsurge in voting in this election, then I think it's going to be harder.
Wow, Jim, for a guy who keeps talking about the glass houses in the Middle East in biblical times, this appears to be a bit of hypocrisy on the president's part.
You know, Greg, he's just trying to get Netanyahu up off his high horse. that came to mind. The Mitt Romney, he's not one of us, came to mind. There's been plenty of divisive politics practiced in the United States and Israel and just about any system of democracy. There's going to be somebody who say, hey, you know, we got to get our side out to vote because their side is getting their side out to vote. And Obama's argument is that, well, because he said Arab turnout was up, it wasn't really a political appeal, it was a racial appeal. However, Latinos punish our enemies, that's totally not an ethnic appeal, right? Mitt Romney, not one of us, totally not an ethnic appeal. Look, the president is really, really upset about Bibi getting elected, and he's looking for any excuse he can to effectively blow up the existing U.S.-Israeli relationship. And now the argument is going to be that somehow Bibi Netanyahu is not the duly elected leader of Israel, that he did it in a dirty way, that his victory is tainted. And because of that, we don't have to be the loyal ally to Israel that we have been in the past, and now we're going to maybe not support him as much at the United Nations as we used to. It's a little bit of like the administration insisting that, yeah, Netanyahu won. And in fact, he won by a much bigger margin than everybody expected. But he did it the wrong way. He did it in a way that somehow delegitimizes it. And that's fairly nonsensical. It's particularly nonsensical coming from President Obama, the guy who rode to the national spotlight by promising not red states and blue states, but red, white, and blue states, and who since then has had no problem playing divisive politics whenever he wanted to. But that's where our policy is, and where it's going to be stuck there for the next next 2 years or so.
Jim, I'm so glad you asked me to get that audio from back in 2010, because in addition to obviously that comment showing what he's saying today to be somewhat hypocritical, the reason he wanted big turnout among Latinos is because he needed more allies in Congress because he couldn't do immigration reform by himself.
Exactly. Look, it's not like I can do an executive order, right?
I need willing partners in Congress, which he had actually at that point. But anyway, Jim, we'll leave it there for today and talk again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.